Well, I see that it's 3:30, but I can't really see anything, so I'm hoping that you guys can all hear me. Yes? Good. Well, hello and welcome. I'm Lynn Langett. I'm a senior developer evangelist with Microsoft. I've been doing quite a bit of work with the SQL Azure product team over the past year. And for the next hour, a little over, hour and 15 or whatever the session is, I'm going to be showing you how to work with SQL Azure primarily as a developer, also include some DBA discussion. I'm going to focus on the use of tools. My session is very demo heavy. I also have a reference PowerPoint deck that I'll be referring to. My PowerPoint deck is already posted on my blog. I'm sure you can also get it from the Tech Ed Australia site. My blog can be found at SoCalDevGal, Southern California Developer Gal, SoCalDevGal. So the deck for this that has extensive notes can be found there. I'm going to go ahead and walk back over there. And one thing I do ask is I have three different machines I'm working with. I will try to diligently switch, but if for some reason I forget to switch, just holler out and remind me to switch. Okay, so I'm going to go over here. All right, so I'm going to speak up a bit more. Can you guys hear me? Good? All right, okay. All right, so what are we going to talk about? The objective of this session is to understand in detail the breadth of the developer tools that are available for SQL Azure. I'm going to show you the portal as it currently stands in kind of a way that you've probably not looked at it before. I'm going to show you SQL Server Management Studio in quite a bit of detail, and compare and contrast the SQL Azure experience with the on-prem experience that you're all familiar with. I'm going to show you two versions of Management Studio. I'm going to show you 2008 R2 SP1, and I'm also going to show you the Denali public CTP so that you can see some of the differences. I'm going to spend some time in Visual Studio, of course, because this is a developer-focused session. I'm going to show you the different interactivity inside of Visual Studio as it stands, 2010 SP1. I also have the Community Technology Preview 3 on SSDT, or SQL Server Developer Tools, which is internally called Juno. So I'm going to show you a bit about that. I'm then going to show you a light switch, which is a standalone edition of Visual Studio. I saw from the tweet stream that some of you have gone to light switch sessions. This isn't per se a session on that, rather showing how you can use it as a tool to work with SQL Azure. And then I'm going to finish with some explanation of command line tools, open source tools, PowerShell, and third-party tools. So I have a lot of material. Like I said, it's going to be a combination of demos and reference slides, and hopefully you'll come away with a really good sense of our tooling story as it stands today and what we've publicly announced for future for SQL Azure. I will take questions at the end of the session, too. I'll leave a little bit of time at the end. So, all right. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to kind of start from the outside and work our way in. And what I mean by that is we're going to go way outside. For most of you, this is probably something that you've not experienced. So I'm going to switch over to number two here. And because I work in a very competitive market for cloud, I actually carry, and no, Microsoft didn't buy it for me, a MacBook Air. Okay, so I have it boot camped because for some of our customers who don't develop in the Microsoft platforms, using our relational cloud storage is interesting. So people may be coming from PHP or Java. So one of the ways that our customers will interact with SQL Azure is our portal. And what I have here is the portal, but in a kind of a different way. Rather than running an IE on Windows 7, which most of you would probably do, just to show you that, you know, it does work. And if you've not seen the portal before, it's kind of an interesting way to show it. I'm showing it on the Mac OS on Google Chrome. So inside of here, when you first get your account, if you're new to sort of the whole Azure platform, what you would be doing to work with the relational aspect or SQL Azure is you would be creating a new database server. Now, because I'm already set up, I'm just going to go to the database node, and I actually have two different servers set up for the purposes of demonstration. And inside of here, you can see my server instance. Your server instance will get a randomly generated name, and you can see that the fully qualified name is over to the right here, and it has .database.windows.net. So there are some things that you can do using this portal, and sometimes that's the most convenient way. You can also use command line tools to do these same things. And some of the things that you might do are first at the server level. So you might make a change to the admin password. You might set some firewall rules. You know, if I wanted to add a firewall rule, it's all just through a GUI, and I could say, tech@Australia. And it gives me my IP address, and I can just copy and paste it. It's pretty simple. By default, there's no access to the server, so you have to set some rules up so that you can have access. Now, your particular account will be set up to have a certain number of databases on your server instance, depending on the account that you purchase. I'm not exactly sure of all the promotional offers here in Australia. In the US, we had a 30-day and then a 90-day trial account that a lot of our developers were using that gave you free access to the Azure platform, and the SQL Azure aspect was you got two databases to try out. Now, I have fuller accounts because of demonstration purposes, so if I'm working with my server here and I wanted to create a database, then I could simply create a database, and then I would say, test for, where we are here, TechEd Gold Coast. And then I would have the choice here to select from the different offerings for SQL Azure, which at this time are web or business. So at this time, web and business are just differentiated by the maximum capacity. We have announced that at some future date, there'll be feature differences, kind of like the on-prem, standard, and enterprise. So if we say web, then we have the opportunity to select from 1 gig or 5 gig as the max capacity. And the way we bill for SQL Azure is on actual space used, not max capacity. We do have the ability through the alter database command, as long as your service plan includes the higher capacity, to go to a higher level capacity if need be. So I'm just going to create a quick database here. And it's a real simple process. So then inside of here, you can see if I scroll down somewhere down here, I got a lot of tests. There it is. There's my new database. And you can see it's a web edition. It tells me the size. And I could look at the connection string right inside of here. And I could just copy out these connection strings in my client application. The idea with the portal is really lightweight access for developers who don't want to install any client tools. That's the concept with the portal. And I realize that a lot of you guys are, work with the complete Microsoft stack, and so you may not use the portal very much, but it is a really good sort of starting point. And then once you have a database, and I'll take one that's already populated here, the other thing that you can do is you can work with it a little bit. So inside of here, you can see obviously that you can create, drop, test connectivity, but probably the more interesting thing is manage. And what this will do is this will open up a child window, and this is in Silverlight. That's why it renders on Chrome. And one thing that it does do, just as a point of fact, is it reserves some isolated storage. So it'll ask you, and it didn't do that because I've run it before. So if you have to have a policy set up on the client machines to allow for the allocation of isolated storage just for storing a little bit of information. And of course, because it's Silverlight, we got to have some spinny thing. That's just the way it goes. And then inside of here, this is just a little sample database that I use for the purposes of demonstration. It's a fun database, actually. I also teach kids, and some of the kids that I teach are high school girls, and high school girls are interested in finding hot boys. So this is a boyfriend database for the high school girls. Okay. So inside of here, you can see that I have the ability to work with tables. So I can go inside of this table, and then I have the ribbon up here, and I can look at the data. So really, really lightweight. And you're probably saying, hey, I'm underwhelmed. It doesn't really do that much. It is a very lightweight tool by design. Now, one of the reasons I'm taking the time to show you this and to start with this is because this tool is actually hosted on our data centers, and when we add features to it, they will just appear in the tool. So nothing to install because it's, all web-based. Right now, you can simply, look at the data, you can design the table, and it works with tables, views, and stored procedures. We have announced that we're going to put more features into this portal, so if your business case has any reason to use the portal, it's something that you want to pay attention to. So that's sort of the first thing, and it works identically in IE as this. It just works just exactly the same. So if you wanted to, you know, make a new view, you just, you know, say new column on the view and just add it on in, and so on and so forth. So pretty straightforward. Okay? So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to switch back to the slides. And I'm going to reboot this thing so I can bring it up in Windows for something I'm going to show you later on. So let me bring this up and switch back over here while this is coming. So we looked at the portal and we looked at the manage capability of databases. And let me just bring this up. There we go. And we drilled in and we brought up that child window where you could work currently with tables, views, and stored procedures. And I advised you that we've announced that we're going to be adding more features to this portal and they will just appear. Basically, you sign in with your Windows Live ID. And also, I mentioned that all the features inside of here you can also implement with other types of tools or via scripts if you don't wish to use the portal. One other thing I'll mention is we do have a kind of a small beta of SQL Azure reporting services. It's a kind of a quiet beta, limited in scope, and we're going to have a broader beta. It is exposed through the portal. You can see that you've got your endpoint showing through the portal that you access. So if you are interested in exploring hosted reporting services that can scale via the cloud, you're going to want to pay attention to the SQL Azure team blog to see when the beta is open up to a broader audience. Okay, so we took a look at that. Now, continuing our theme of kind of open or non-Microsoft or lightweight tooling, we're going to go to another aspect of working with SQL Azure. And this is a theme really throughout Microsoft Data Access. You've probably heard at this conference something about OData. OData is something, as a company, we're really focusing on in several different capacities, and SQL Azure is just included. Now, we have a CTP or a beta area for SQL Azure in general, and that's, as it says in the slide here, SQL Azure Labs. You can see the sqlazurelabs.com, and you would just sign in there, and then you would have access to these CTP services, and included there is OData. Also, you'll see, just as point of fact, we have a data sync service, and we have an import-export beta available. We'll talk about those in a minute or so. So going into OData, if you're not familiar with it, it's an open protocol. It exposes your data with a REST head. So again, any sort of developer can then consume. In the US, we've had a lot of iPhone people say, hey, this is kind of interesting. I'd like to store my data in SQL Azure and create my iPhone app, so I'm going to use iOS. Again, I'm not as familiar with this market, so I'm not sure if you'd have PHP or Ruby or whatever it might be, but it really doesn't matter. So what does this look like? Currently, it's in a pretty simple format, and I'm going to switch to machine number one to show you. So give it a minute to switch. There we go. So I'm logged in here, and you just go to the OData service, and then it tells you a bit about it, and then you simply connect to your server. So you can see there I've already connected, put in my password. You select the particular database, and again, this is a beta, so it's not as granular as we intend it to be when it's fully baked. You're exposing the entire database this way, which is, you know, probably not granular enough in terms of permissions. So you choose to expose a particular database on your SQL Azure server, and then you associate user mapping. And again, I'm just, for purposes of demo, I did DBO. And then the important thing is you get this endpoint. Okay? So this is your endpoint that you then can access via your particular client. And your data comes back either in XML or JSON or some standard kind of format. So what I did is I went ahead just to pre-stage this, and There's the good old XML. If you then access it with that endpoint. Obviously, that's just for testing because, you know, no client is ever gonna look at it. We're using this same dating game database, and you can see that there are a number of collections which are representations of tables, and then you could further query, and then you would see, you know, the columns and the data, so on and so forth. So, since we're developers, it's time, and let me sign out of here, so I need to do that for another demo, for us to then see this inside of Visual Studio. So, what I've done is I've created a simple client inside of Visual Studio. So I just basically created a console client, and then I added a service reference to that endpoint. And once you add that service reference, then, and there's the service reference, to expose the data on the simplest possible way, you simply create a variable for the context, and then you associate that particular entity or that database at that location or that URI, so there you'll recognize it's that endpoint. And then you can use a link query, simplest possible case, where you can say, in that context, what are the entities or the tables? And of course, we have boyfriends, girlfriends, and who dated who. And then you can just for each over each one. So very, very simple type of access. And I'll just run this so you can see what it looks like. It's not going to be exciting. I'm not a UX designer. And so this is going out to the cloud, and this is retrieving that information from my SQL Azure instance. In this case, I think it's the first names of all the boys in the database. And it's just bringing them up inside of my console app. So the idea with this is the most lightweight mechanism where you just want to expose your data for your particular client. Doesn't matter what the client is. You don't have to have any SDK. You don't have to have any, you know, sort of other stuff. Basically, you just expose it, and then you add the reference to that endpoint, and then you just create the context. And I should actually probably drill in and show you just so you guys can see. So, like, for example, this is probably the most interesting thing here. So you can see inside of here that for that context, I have some methods available so I can work with the entities, you know, add items to boyfriends, view, so on and so forth. By default, of course, I have no permission, so you can do anything to the database, which obviously is not what you do in production. And it's really just as simple as that. Now, what I think is interesting about this is not only are we exposing SQL Azure data or allowing you to expose SQL Azure data as OData through our beta portal, we also have this capacity through Entity Framework and Data Services and Entity Framework. So now we're moving away from sort of the open source, any client, and we're moving more towards the Microsoft developer world. So what I did for the purposes of contrast inside of this demo on OData is I set up an Entity Framework OData service. So in order to do that, I just, again, set up a console app, and then I added an entity framework. Let me put in ADO. ADO.net entity data model, okay? Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about Entity Framework in this talk. I'm actually going to talk more about it tomorrow. I have a talk at 3:30 where I'm talking about SQL Server 2008 R2 developer features. And it's not so much new features, rather features that a lot of our customers haven't had time to dig into. So I'm going to talk in more depth about Entity Framework there. In this particular case, I'm using database first, which is the first implementation, and I assume some, a lot of you are probably already using. So I'm using database first. I'm simply inferring a model from an existing database. What's salient to this talk is that the database that I'm connecting to is a cloud database. It's simply a connection string. So once I add that in, then that gives me my model. And it looks like just like any other model that we've seen. So you can see that's the database model. It's super simple. And then I'm creating a OData service on top of that. And to do that, all I did is I created a class derived from data service, and I passed in the dating game entities, which came from the entity framework. And then again, simplest possible implementation in the initialize service method, I passed in the configuration, which is, you know, the connection information, and then I configured the entity set access rule, again, lazily to everything. Which this is just so you can see how this stuff works. If you're just getting into it, obviously in production, you'd have to set specific access for specific methods. And I set all rights for this. So once I've done that, then what to me is interesting is the client is almost indistinguishable from the other client. And let me show you what I mean. This one is the OData. And lest we forget, it says OData, right? So we just set up a context, we call boyfriends, and then we iterate over, right? Now let me show you what the client for the entity framework data service, or OData, looks like. It looks the same. You put in a service reference, and inside of here, dating game entities. And here's the URI. Let me put it in a new line so you guys can see it. It's hosted on localhost, right? Because I'm running that service not from the cloud. I'm running it from this particular machine, obviously simplified for purposes of demo. And if I just go back out of here and then I run it, it's going to return the same information. So this idea of exposing SQL Azure data, let me just run this thing, as OData is a feature set that we've been adding throughout of our stack. So is this guy running? There it is, okay. So just very, very simple. Now, one of the criticisms that we get from customers, and frankly a criticism I had before I joined Microsoft, is that our demos were too complicated. You know, you'd go and you'd download these demo kits and you have to install all this stuff. So I purposely wrote these demos as simple as I could so that you could have sample code that you could just really in 5 minutes get up and running, and then you can explore adding permissions, you know, adding more layers of complexity. And on my blog, I posted the demos along with the slides so you can pull them down after the talk if you're interested in getting started right away. Okay, so let me switch back and let me close out of this and switch back to number 4. So we took a look at the OData exposure through the CTP portal, and then we wrote a quick client to see how that would work. And then for comparison, I created an entity framework connection to SQL Azure and a data service on top of that, and a client just so you could see kind of what that looked like. Okay? So next thing that we're going to move into is the world of Management Studio. Okay? Now, one of the things that the team has put out onto the blog, and I want to make sure that you guys are aware of, is that if you are planning to use Management Studio in 2008 R2, be sure to upgrade to Service Pack 1, as they said on the blog, for continued connectivity. The reason is that SQL Azure instances across our data centers are being upgraded to add new features, and Service Pack 1 for Management Studio, it will be required in order to have continuous connectivity. OK? Okay, so I'm going to switch back and show you what that looks like. Okay, so here I am inside of Management Studio, and this is 2008. And you can see the version there, okay? So having Service Pack 1 with it, all right? And then I've just connected to an on-prem instance just for the purposes of comparison, so that you guys can see on-prem versus the SQL Azure experience. So now I'm going to connect to a SQL Azure instance. SQL Azure currently only supports SQL Server authentication. It does not support Windows authentication. So you always have to authenticate with Windows authentication. For some clients, in addition to the username for the logon, you have to append an @ and the first portion of the server name, the randomly generated server name, if you will. And that's because of the way high availability is set up, because you are actually connecting to one of three physical instances. One of the things that you're getting with SQL Azure is you're getting 3 9s of availability. That's part of what you're paying for. So where you're connecting is not always the same place, because you have three physical copies of the server across the particular data center that you've implemented in. So certain clients will require like LLang at @ KIP, blah, 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 blah. So in this particular case, I think this one does not. So let me go ahead and connect. And once I connect, you'll notice that the icon for SQL Azure is different than the one for SQL on-prem. And you can see there is SQL 11. So this particular one has been upgraded. SQL 11, of course, is a version of Denali or SQL vNext. Now, SQL Azure is releasing in a different cadence than SQL Server. So SQL Azure has a certain release schedule. It's more rapid than the on-prem. Last year, the team released, I think, 3 or 4 times. And one of the reasons for that is, frankly, competition. It's a good market for you as consumers, because there is quite a bit of competition in the cloud database realm, and we are working really hard to add the features that you're looking for. One of the things that the team has announced that is not yet added, but we are aggressively trying to get into the SQL Azure product, is backup, because that is in the competitive product. And we do not have that yet in our product, but it's been announced, it's on our timeline, and I don't have a specific date, but we're really working hard on it. So you can see we have 2 different editions. The next thing you can see is we have different nodes, and that's because, of course, SQL Azure does not support all the features of on-premise SQL Server. So you can see inside of here you have the Azure instance, you have database, security, and management, and in the on-prem instance you have database, security, server objects, replication, management, and agent. So obviously you don't have agent on the Azure instance. You don't have replication, the sort of the front of replication. You don't have server objects because you're working at the database level, and you'll have fewer objects inside of these containers as we drill in. One of the other things you'll notice right off is if you go to a certain database, so I have dating game on both just for comparison. So if I go to on-prem, I've got in my context-sensitive menu, you know, the familiar many, many options that we're used to. And if I go to my Azure instance and I go to dating game, you'll see that the context-sensitive menu, when it renders here, will have fewer options, again, because it's going to show you the options that are available in this particular SQL Azure instance. Now, you might be saying, if you're new to this, which options are available and which aren't? The MSDN documentation is very thorough in detailing which options are available. One of the things that I've done to help customers is I've kept a slide deck up with each release. I update it each time a SQL Azure is released with a list of all, several detailed lists of the features that are there or not there. So T-SQL features, product features, so it's like a one-stop shop. So that's on my blog if you don't, you know, have the time to read the documentation. So couple of things that you're going to notice that are different inside of here. So if I go inside and I say new query, and I bring up a query window for my dating game database, there's some things that are good, many things that are good, actually. So I say select star from boyfriends, and I execute, and the query experience, and this is going against the cloud, is fast, and it's familiar, and you know you have your query plan. So that's awesome, because these are all tools that help us to be productive. And this is, you know, coming right in from the cloud. This is good stuff. This is things that we're really proud of and make you as developers very productive with the cloud. Some things, though, are slightly different because of the way we're implemented here. If I go up over here to the switch database dropdown and I try to switch database, it won't work. Okay, it's not that the product is broken. It's that, remember, you get multiple instances of the server when you create a SQL Azure server, because for that high availability, you don't set up the clustering, you don't set up the failover, you get that. You obviously also get multiple instances of the database. So the database could be on different physical servers. So what you need to do, because you can't include a use database command in a script for SQL Azure to switch databases because of the layout, you need to go in here and you need to say connection, and you need to change the connection to a different database. So then you go inside of here and you say, all right, I would prefer to go to master, I guess, and I'll connect, and then I can connect. So it's just a slightly different use of the tools. So it's these kind of little things that if you know about them, you know, they'll help you to be more productive. So I like to show customers as we're going along. A lot of stuff is just the same, though, and that's good. So, you know, I can drill in. I can, you know, look at my table. I can look at my columns. You know, 95% of the stuff you get on-prem is there in SQL Azure, which is really, really good stuff. You know, I can right-click. I can script the table as a select if I want to do that. You know, just very easy and fast. And this is why we all use and love Management Studio. So this stuff is all good. Now, there's an interesting thing here that you see in my Management Studio, but it's grayed out. And this gives you a preview into what's coming next with Denali and the tooling around Denali. And what this is something that some of us have got other third-party tools to have, but as developers, we all love IntelliSense. So you can see I have a little button here, IntelliSense enabled, but it's grayed out. It's grayed out because I'm in 2008. This is not a feature that's in 2008, but it's showing up in my toolbar because I've installed side-by-side Denali. So one of the things you might be interested in is if you're interested in testing, you can, I'll just show you in a minute, you can install, you know, 2008 R2 and Denali on the same machine, but you'll get a couple little things like this where you have this button pop up and it doesn't, you know, work because you're not in that thing, not in that particular instance. So let me close out of this. And let me switch over to Denali. And here, get out of here, bring this up, the second instance. So I have to tell you a funny story about this laptop. This is the PDC 2 years ago laptop. So I've been traveling. I was in New Zealand for the first time, and first time here in the Gold Coast, having a great time, and my power supply failed. So I just used another one from another machine, and then my wireless adapter failed. So it's a good thing that's my last presentation tomorrow. I was going to give my machine away as swag, but I thought that'd be mean. Not a good machine. I'm teasing. All right, anyway, so here I am. I'm in Denali. We're still going. This is good. Okay. And wow, this doesn't look like Management Studio. This looks kind of like Visual Studio. Let's take a look and see what we've done. So here's Denali, okay, CTP3. This is a public CTP. If you haven't already got it, you can go out after the session and you can get it. So let's see what we got. So this is a cloud session. So we're connected to a Denali instance for the purposes of comparison, okay? And we're going to connect to a cloud instance. So let's do that. So go here, connect to my cloud instance, connect in. Looking good, all right. Let's see, I've got dating game on both instances. Okay, oh, I should show you the containers. Containers are pretty similar. Same sort of thing going on, right? Okay, so now let's go and do a query. And let's do a new query. All right, so I am inside of here, and let's see if I've done this correctly. Maybe not. Give me a second. Is it going to do it? It's okay, it's connected. All right, connected to dating game. And has to think about it. Now, I'll tell you honestly, the reason I'm fumbling around a little bit here, I actually spent some time in Seattle in July with the team. And in Denali, there's three different ways that IntelliSense is enabled. And they didn't enable it in all three in the CTP. Obviously, in the final product, it will be. So it looks like I hit one of the ways where it's not enabled, because it's kind of fun when you can turn it on. Let's see. IntelliSense, nope. So in the raw query, it's not enabled. So it's probably in another area here. So let me see what I can do. Let me go out. And I think I will come back to that because I don't want to waste time doing that. It's in Visual Studio. So, all right. So let me come back over here. So other than the color change, it really looks very, very similar. And by the time the product ships, IntelliSense will be enabled. And the thing that's really cool, and you'll see it in Visual Studio, is IntelliSense will be version enabled. And this is super, super helpful for us as SQL Server developers, because we'll probably have an on-premise instance of SQL Server that we're developing against before we go and deploy it up to SQL Azure. And because we have feature differences between the two, the fact that the IntelliSense will include warnings for when we're including features that are not supported by SQL Azure is a really terrific feature set. I'm really happy that the team put that in. All right. So there we go. We did that. We did that. Okay, all right. Well, I knew there was something else I wanted to show you inside Management Studio. I just had to look at my slide to be reminded. I want to show you a little bit about DACPACs and the UACs. So let me pop back and show you a bit about that. Okay, DACPAC, data to your application. DACPACs are a single container designed for you as a DBA or a developer to manage the life cycle of your database environment. And by database environment, I mean your database schema, and this is the important bit, policies, and in beta, possibly also your data. So complete management for the life cycle. Now, DACPACs have had a couple of versions, and I know a lot of our customers haven't had time to try them out. So the first couple versions did not support all the features of an on-prem SQL Server. So a lot of people said, this isn't really useful. I'm just going to use scripts or whatever. One of the things that a lot of our customers didn't have time to understand or realize is that DACPACs have always or currently support all the features in SQL Azure. So let me just kind of show you how this works. So inside of SQL Azure, inside of Management Studio, I'm going to right-click on the dating game here. And it's going to say, I need to connect. So there it is. Okay. And I'm going to pull this so you can see it. So I have these two options. I can extract the dating game metadata and policy information as a DACPAC, and I can optionally also register, okay? So the extraction creates a set of files, they're XML files, that are encapsulated as a single .dac/pac file. It's like a zip file. And that file can then be used by DBAs to pass around the schema and policies from on-prem to cloud, cloud to on-prem, on-prem to on-prem, whatever, however you want to do it. Optionally, you have this UAC or utility access control point, and that can monitor applications that you have registered as DAC packs. And I'll show you the type of monitoring in just a second. So let me go ahead and extract this as a DAC pack. And I of course, made sure that the features, well, this is SQL Azure, so all the features in the database would be supported. It brings up a little wizard if you've never done this before. And of course, you can do it with on-prem. If you run it on-prem and you have database with features that aren't supported, then it'll give you a little warning and you can figure that out. So it's pretty self-explanatory. So it just says, set the properties, review the dependencies, and build the DAC. So, okay, and then you set a version, and I'll set it for one, and I'll say test for TechEd Australia. And the reason it's given me the warning is I've already got one with this name. You have to have a unique name if you're not going to overwrite. And I'm going to call it dating game, and I'll call it TechEd Australia, and say save. And then I'll say next, and it'll build it. So again, it's extracting out the metadata, so the GDL, if you will, of the tables, views, stored procedures, and then if you were using any policies. Now, the policies are really important, and again, it's some features that our customers really haven't had time to explore. Policies are, of course, collections of security settings. The whole idea is analogous to network security policies, but it's for your database environment so that you can transfer your policy settings rather than remembering your individual security settings. And as so many of us have to deal with compliance issues, this becomes a really, really important set of functionality to use. And I advise customers to first make sure they're on-premise set up correctly, and then you can move this to the cloud. So it's building. And while this is building, I'm going to switch over to my UAC, which I've already set up. I'm trying to remember if I set it up on this instance or the other one. So this is a new functionality that's 2008, actually, that a lot of customers haven't got to. But the idea is the utility control point. And it's a monitoring service that gives you a dashboard of the overhead of your particular server and databases. And you can include DAC packs inside of here. So I honestly don't remember if I have to switch to the other version. I certainly didn't set it up on the cloud. Let me take a look here. All right, so, oh, I did, okay, good. I couldn't remember if I did on both of them or not. So here's the Utility Explorer, and you get that off the View menu. And then when you say register to a data tier application, then you get this dashboard inside of here. And again, some of you have third-party tools that do this now, but it's just a set of functionality that you can use as part of the DAC pack cycle. So I'll look in here at the dashboard. So what you can see is you can see the utilization. There's the data tier application health. The managed instances are the data tier instances with overutilized resources, CPU, files, so on and so forth, underutilized, storage, and you have the history. Then if you click in, and did I put a DAC in here? Yeah, I did. Okay, so I've got a DAC for dating game, the previous one. I put it in here, and you can see the CPU utilization. Here, I'll drill in so you guys can see it. CPU, storage, the policy details, so you can see information about the policy, because remember, the DAC doesn't just pull the DDL, it pulls policy, and then the property details. So I know this is more on the DBA side, but I also know that a lot of our customers have to be both DBAs and developers, and it is part of the life cycle of managing Azure, so I wanted to show that. Let me switch back and see if this thing is done. There it is, okay. So it's telling me, okay, everything is supported, this is all good. So I'm going to say next, and it will build the package. Now, what can I do with that package? Well, as a DBA, I can work with that package either in Management Studio, or I can work with it through PowerShell or some scripts. But what we're going to move towards is working with it in Visual Studio as part of the lifecycle management, which in our case, we're going to talk about Azure with this, because of course we're working with an Azure database. So the scenario here would be the DBA says to the developer, all right, I'll build you a DAC pack from the cloud database for you to start your development against that data source. All right, so while that's building, then I'll switch back to the slides over here. Okay. All right. Okay, so as we're moving over into Visual Studio, to me, one of the most exciting things that we've got on the table is SQL Server Developer Tools. We showed them publicly last year at SQL Pass Conference in the United States, and we've been showing them at conferences kind of around the world ever since. This is a public beta, so again, you can get these bits. Juno is the code name CTP3, SQL Server Developer Tools, or SSDT. Now, what is this? This is a set of tools that can either A, stand alone. So the thinking, remember back to the beginning of the presentation, the portal stood alone. We have a lot of tooling that can stand alone because we have different kinds of developers developing against SQL Azure. Juno can also integrate into Visual Studio. It can integrate into Visual Studio 2010, going forward, okay? Standalone, integrate in, all right? All right, so what is this? Some of you might know of a previous version of this kind of tooling as something called DataDude, but it's way more than DataDude, if you will. So one of the most interesting things, and this is what I was talking about with the IntelliSense, is that you can version target. So you can target for SQL Azure, and Juno tools are aware of the capabilities and features that are SQL Azure specific. So from within Visual Studio, you'll get warnings, and I'll show you that on your code, if you try to implement a feature that's not supported. Okay? There's a bunch of other features. You have things like snapshotting. You have improved schema compare. You have support for the entity framework. Now, in this public release, I actually don't think it's very minimal if there is support. We've announced that we'll be having more support in the next public beta. You'll be able to see that. And that's, I think, coming out later this year. I'm not exactly sure the date on that, but we have announced that we're going to continue to integrate more with entity framework. The IntelliSense is something we're working really, really hard on to give you a very similar IntelliSense experience with T-SQL inside of Visual Studio that's version and edition specific, similar to what you get with .NET languages of that quality. Okay. So before we switch over that, I will go back over here to one. And once this comes up, to be really tall to see it. You can see that the DAC pack succeeded, okay? So fantastic. So now we're going to close out of here and we're going to open up Visual Studio. This is 2010 Ultimate because I'm an evangelist and I have Ultimate everything. Again, Juno is not required to have any version of Visual Studio. But I'm assuming that with this audience, most of you have some version of Visual Studio. If you go to install Juno, I will tell you, I actually wrote about this and I talked to the team about it on my blog. You use the web platform installer and read the SSDT team blog if you're installing Juno without Visual Studio, because there's a couple of things that'll be easier if you read the blog. So let me just show inside of here what it will look like once you have a full install. So inside of, this is Visual Studio. You can see I have lots of stuff, because I just like all kinds of stuff. So let me, you won't be able to see that. So you can see right there, SQL Server Developer Tools, codename Juno, CTP3. Okay, that's what you're looking for. inside of Visual Studio. Service Pack 1 for Visual Studio is required if you're going to integrate the Juno tools. So Service Pack, and it'll warn you. Okay, so what does all this mean? Well, let's make a new console app, because, you know, I care nothing for user experiences. Sorry. You know, when I was a production person, I hired it done. Let's see, I'll call it TechEd. I have utmost respect for people that are good at UX, but I'm not one of them. So inside of here, I'm going to show you first a new node inside of Server Explorer. And that new node is one of the areas where you'll see the SSDT tools. So it's a little bit confusing because we still have our data connection node, and it still functions identically. So we still can connect to a data source, and that data source can be SQL Server or SQL Azure, and we can browse the data and so on and so forth. And we've kept that just because, you know, a lot of you are using that, and that's fine. You can keep on using it. But we have this new node that's one of the points of exposure for Juno tools. So let's drill inside of there. And I'm connected already to my two on-prem editions, and you can see that I've got, I need to expand this so you can actually see it. So you can see that I've got both Denali and 2008 R2 connected there. So now if I wanted to make a connection to SQL Azure, I'd add SQL Server, and I would select the SQL Server that was one of my cloud instances, and I would connect to it. And then inside of here, I could work in a connected fashion. And that's one of the ways that you can work with the Juno tools or SSDT. And I can see my databases here. And inside of here, I have an enhanced experience over what we have currently in the data connections node. So what are some of these enhancements? They're really small, but you know, they're all for productivity. So inside of here, I can see, for example, all my tables, and you can see that my options inside of my tables are to write a query, to view the code, view the designer, or view the data. So just a kind of a handy thing. I know some of you have tooling for this. You can view the data, and that'll pull up all the data. And then if I wanted to, I could script it. So, you know, again, this is all coming from the cloud. It's all live. It's not a huge amount of data, but it's all live from the cloud, which is all good. So in addition to that, I could have a new query. And once this comes up, so now if I go select star from, and now, all right, and I'm going to go here and run this. Yep. So the demo gods are not being smiling with me today. So in a normal world, IntelliSense would work, but I was having a little bit of issue with this morning. So your bits most probably would. I'm going to blame it on dying laptop. Previously, you would expect this to work in the CTP is what I'm saying, because I've seen it. So what you would see is you'd get a list normally. And let me toggle this and see if that kicks it in. Nope, it's not going to kick it in. So I've had a name pipes problem. It's kind of weird. All right, so normally you would have a connected IntelliSense experience. That part is exposed in these particular bits. Sorry, mine's not cooperating, but that's the way it goes. Now, the more interesting sort of part, because we have some enhancements, and they're good enhancements, and they're going to help you out, but to me the more interesting part is this new type of project. So this new type of project allows for offline development. And this is one of the key parts of the features in Juno. So I'm going to create a new project. And again, I'm connected to the cloud. So this is kind of analogous to what we saw with the DAC pack, but we'll see some differences here. And I'm going to call this dating game, I don't know, cloud or something. And I could add this to the existing project, because let's say it's a client or whatever, I can make a new solution. All right, and you can see I've got some options inside of here where I can, you know, choose what to import, and I can set the folder structure and things like that. So I'm going to say start, and I'm going to say save. I've got my projects set where they don't save because I create so many of them. So it's a little setting that you can toggle in Visual Studio. Now what this is going to do is this is going to create an offline project that you can work on. And this is super important for SQL Azure because think about this. You know, obviously you're not going to develop against the cloud. So this development experience is a key part of the Juno feature set, in particular targeted at the SQL Azure developers. So it's generating a local copy that you can work with inside of Visual Studio. Say finish. Now, again, I was having some name pipes problems, so we'll see how it goes. So inside of here, the tables. Yep. So there, okay. So now I've got its script. Oh, here. Probably can't see it. So here I've got my copy, and it's scripted all that information. Now, just from a lifecycle management standpoint, what I did is I used Visual Studio, and I connected to an existing cloud database. And then I was working connected just to see it was okay. And then I created the offline project, okay? Now, I could continue to work that way. That's one way to do it. Or I can use a DAC pack. Remember in Management Studio, I created a DAC pack? So I could import a DAC pack as the basis for one of these projects too. All these different things are available to you. Now, let's see if I can get this one to work. This was being a little bit flaky, but I'll try it. Again, it's my setup here, so sorry. It's kind of cool. I wanted to show you guys this. This is the new table designer. So this is a part of the Juno offering. And what's neat about it is, oh, I don't want to do this table, though, because I use this table, is it allows you to develop in whatever way is most comfortable for you. So you can develop by typing inside of here. And as soon as I go out of here, watch what happens. Did you catch it? Did you see it went down here too? So it keeps the panels in sync. It's just like the other Visual Studio developer experiences, like when you're in ASP.NET, you know, when you're dragging controls on and it changes the HTML or the ASP code or whatever. It's the same kind of experience. And also, the team intelligently put this sort of commonly used objects section over here. Yes, you can get it from the properties, but if you wanted to create a new index, for example, just say add new index, and then it gives you a stub. Once you get out of it, let's see me tab out of this, and I'll just say new column or whatever. Again, obviously, I'm just doing whatever for purposes of demo, and then you can see that there it gives you the stub, and you'd have to put the column name, and then you go in here, and then you put in whatever name you want it to be. So I'm going to say English name. Okay. And there it's going to tell me, there it's okay. So that's all good. So now let me save this. And then let me try to show you, let's see if I script this table, the IntelliSense that shows you for SQL Azure that something's not valid. When you build, it'll show you. I'm trying to think of the easiest possible way to do that. Oh, yeah, I can do it on the create table. So file groups aren't supported on SQL Azure. So if the demo gods are happy with me, let's see, I may need to put this in square brackets. Oops. I don't know if I've got my syntax right there. There, okay, there. Yay, demo gods are happy. See that? So, like I said, the team did not complete the IntelliSense throughout all the different areas on Management Studio and the Juno tools for this beta, but that's like what it's going to look like when it's done. It's going to be that nicely integrated where you get the error message that says this feature is not supported in either the cloud, on-prem, on, you know, a particular edition or version, which is terrific for developer productivity, something that's really, really useful. So let me just take that off. So you have all kinds of stuff in Juno, and I could really talk for a long, long time about it. I'm going to talk in more detail about it tomorrow. So if you want to see more detail, I'm going to spend about 20 or 30 minutes on it. I wanted to just kind of whet your appetite on it because I've got other stuff to show you. So let me actually get out of here and switch back over here. And we switched. Okay. So I talked about these things. And I showed you the new node. I talked about working online or offline. Oh, one thing I didn't actually show you was, do I have it here? Is my laser pointer going out? Well, anyway, it's the local DB. So you get a node in your SQL Server node, if you will, that represents that local, they call it the buffered version of that SQL Azure database. And it looks just like, there it is. It looks just like, can you see it? There. It looks just like sort of a full version. So you can actually work in this node as well. The idea is to allow you to use all the functionality that you're used to from Management Studio inside of Visual Studio. Okay, there's a bunch of other stuff, like I said, that I'll show you more tomorrow. The table designer, schema compare, refactoring, projects, debugging, publishing, really good stuff, really good stuff. So the big vision with this is that this is called database services, and that the SSDT is also going to, for the Denali release, include the business intelligence or BIDS Development Studio. So there'll be no more separate BIDS for Denali. That's been announced, but there's no public beta on that yet. So I guess that will be coming down the road. And the database services include all the stuff. So there's a really good session in Tech Ed North America. I put it in this deck. So if you really want to drill into the Juno tools, I'd recommend that you watch that session and pull them down and start playing with it. Okay, and I showed you the table designer, offline projects. I didn't show you schema compare, that's what it looks like, refactoring. Didn't show you that, and version targeting. Oh, that's actually really cool. Again, you can set right in your publish the version targeting. See how you can set it for SQL Azure? Super, super important. That's how you get the IntelliSense for your particular target. For example, if you're working solely with an on-prem database and you're getting ready to deploy it and you think that you've only included features that are supported by SQL Azure, you can do your version targeting to SQL Azure and it'll do a check for you. Okay, so we looked at all that stuff and we looked at that stuff. So, next thing I wanted to show you is another aspect of Visual Studio, and that is called Light Switch. So let me open that up over here. So I haven't got as much time as I would like to explore Light Switch, but every time I get into it, I like it more and more. Now, again, it's for a specific audience. And if you are writing a lot of code in Visual Studio every day, it is probably not for you. But there are probably people in your organization for whom that is not a primary activity that want to have certain applications, maybe work with them. I'm just going to bring something up over here so that you can see properly. Just a second. Let me do my zoom it. There we go. So let me switch over and show you what it looks like. We have recently released the final version of this. We have at least one evangelist who's almost full-time worldwide talking about this. Her name is Beth Massey, and she's done a series of videos on it. So it fully supports Azure, including SQL Azure. So let me switch over, and this is number two. Let's see if this is coming up okay. There we go. Nice. Okay, so the concept with Light Switch, if you've never seen it, is it's a standalone environment. If you have Visual Studio, then it incorporates into Visual Studio. More often than not, people, I think, will have it as a standalone environment, and it allows you to then create a project of type either VB or C Sharp. And it kind of reminds me of Access development in a way, but interestingly, you can use SQL Azure. It has the concept of data and screens. So the idea is you have a data source, and you know if you select database, you can go through, and of course it's just as simple as not to connect to the cloud. And then once you have a data source, which I've already done here, then you create a screen and you add a type of a screen. And it's, again, very access-like in the way that it is set up. I think it's targeted at users who are used to that kind of environment. You create your screen, and then once you have your screen, and I created one here on boyfriends, then you can run it. And then you can make all kinds of enhancements to those screens. I've been spending some time watching Beth's videos, and they've been great. I'm really, really impressed with this. Also, just as an FYI, it works very, very nicely with Windows Azure, which has been interesting to me. Oh, I wonder if I'm connected to the web. Hold on. Not connected. Let me connect. It's kind of hard to show the cloud when there is no cloud. So let me try that again once I'm connected. And is there a refresh on here? There is indeed. So, I mean, you can create an application, a really basic application, in, you know, 15 minutes this way, which is kind of a cool thing. So there it is. That's an editable grid. And if I wanted to make a change here, like, I don't know, these, somebody else helped pick these boyfriends. Let's see. I don't know what these people do. I don't think Mark Anthony and J-Lo are divorced, so I'll put in there divorced. I don't know. I'm not sure. Just to make a change. And I'll say somewhere here, save. And I've now, once it completes, saved it back to the cloud. So slick, slick stuff. So that's what Lightswitch looks like if you've never seen it. So attach to a data source and then create a screen. And the screens have all this kind of interesting editing capability here that you can edit, you know, by the layout, by the data item. Again, I'm no means an expert on this, but it's been really interesting to watch Beth's videos and to see how quickly I can pick up. I'm actually going to try something unique with this, and this kind of leads into the end of my presentation, which is I teach kids. I teach all kinds of kids programming, and I'm actually going to try using this with children to see if this works. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way. I mean it as an on-ramp to get people up and going with cloud applications. So I just think it's kind of an interesting thing, and I wanted to show it. All right, let me switch over here. Okay. All right, so we've got some command line tools, because those are things that we want to be aware of as well. So PowerShell, we have PowerShell support. I referenced a blog post by Buck Woody in here who gives some tips for connecting to PowerShell. A SQL command is supported, BCP is supported. My absolute favorite tool outside of the Microsoft stack was written by a guy who works for Microsoft. He put it up on Codeplex. It's the SQL Azure Migration Wizard. It is a fabulous, quick way to prototype. So let me quickly switch over and show you how to do that. So you download it from Codeplex, and the newest version supports the SQL Azure Federations, which is kind of neat. If you do get Denali, there's a Denali version too. So basically, you just say, okay, I want to move some data. I want to move some schema and data from either Azure to on-prem, or on-prem to Azure, or Azure to Azure. And you just run through the wizard. It takes 5 minutes. Super simple. Now, one interesting thing about this has been so popular that the product team is writing functionality into DACPack. They're calling it the import-export wizard. It's on the SQL Azure CTP portal, and the file itself is called a backpack because it includes a BCP of the data. So they're actually taking this functionality that George Huey, he's an evangelist in Chicago, wrote in this tool, and they're building it into the product because it's been so popular. So it's so easy to use. You know, you just basically say, I take a database, get it from someplace. I'll just take one here. And let's see, I'll connect, and I'm going to list the databases. And then you can push it to the cloud or go the other way. Okay. Oh, am I trying to connect to something that's not there? Hold on. Anyway, I'm not going to take the time to do it because it's so easy. You just connect, grab your database, and go. Now, it's really more for quick prototyping, you know, because you can't control your BCP bash sizes. You can't do transactions, stuff like that. One tool I didn't list on here, but I have used in with customers in production is SSIS. That works seamlessly with SQL Azure. To be complete, third-party tools, there's some from these vendors listed here, and one I wanted to just show you. Let's see if I wrote it on here. There's the Migration Assistant. By the way, there's a migration session for SQL Azure sometime in this conference. It's a talk that I've also done. If you're interested in migration and the specifics around migration and recommendations around migration, you should take a look at that talk. The alternate tools. Oh, and I didn't list it down. I'm getting close to end of time anyway. So there's a website, I can't remember the name of it, I think it's from Quest, that looks very much like the portal. And I was just going to end with that because, you know, you start with the portal, you end with the portal. I just don't remember what the actual URL is. A lot of third-party tools that we're seeing from vendors out there, though. Some of them lightweight, some of them installable. So what I hope that I've accomplished in this time with you, and thank you for hanging with me through the session, is to show you that, first of all, there's a huge amount of tools. One of the things I'm most proud about our SQL Azure offering is the tooling available. I have spent a large amount of time with our product and with competitive products, and I say unequivocally that we have the best tools around our product, and especially for those of us who work primarily in the Microsoft stack, these tools keep us productive. And the fact that we have SSMS and Visual Studio connectivity, and we're adding the new tools with Juno, is really exciting to me. Really makes our product very, very compelling. So that's kind of what I hope that you take away from this. I have some other references here. For Juno, we have the SSDT section on MSDN. We have the forum. We have the team blog. I have some personal references there. Some of you may know that I have an expertise in business intelligence. I've written 3 books on it. I have a webcast series on it. So if you're kind of, as an aside, this is 2008, getting into BI, I have some information for you there. Also, I will be, as for your information, producing some new technical information on the Denali BI implementation. I'll be doing that next year, a lot of it web-based. So if you're interested in that space, you're going to want to watch my blog, which is SoCalDevGal. So in my last minute or two, I was make a sort of plea or an ask to give some thought to the next generation. I had the pleasure today of speaking at the Women in Technology lunch here. It was very well attended. If any of you attended, thank you for attending. And talk to the group about helping our next generation. In the U.S., I'm finding that our teachers are needing assistance from us as technical professionals to help our kids be ready to be creators of technology rather than consumers. So I've formed a volunteer organization that is active worldwide called Teaching Kids Programming. That has a series of courseware. There is some for children very young, 6, 7, 8 years old. There is some for children 10 and up. That's based on Microsoft Small Basic that has introductory programming courseware. And then there for older children, about 13, 14, Introduction to T-SQL, which is relevant for this audience. And all the courseware is free, and it's all available for any of you to use. I had quite a bit of interest at the lunch today, and there will be, I think, many people here in Australia that are starting to use this. So if you have interest, take a look and drop me a mail, and I'll connect you with other people that are wanting to get started teaching kids to program. So that being said, there's a few other resources, and then, let's see, you're supposed to do your eval, and I have exactly 1 minute left. So thank you for hanging in with me, and if you have questions, I'd be happy to take any questions. Okay, you're going to have to talk really loud. Code first. I will be explaining code first and entity framework tomorrow in some pretty good depth. Is code first supported in SQL Azure for a SQL Azure scenario? Is the question? Yes? Come to the talk tomorrow to hear how the support is in the currently released entity framework bits, I guess, would be my answer. Okay, any other questions? If not, yeah, yes? I'm sorry? Yeah, it's always a very good question on, like, what is the real-world performance, okay? So we have a whole group inside Microsoft. They're called the CAT, or the Customer Advisory Team, and they have a blog. They are spending a very large amount of time with early adopting customers, and they are publishing lots of really good white papers about performance baselining. So my answer is going to be that it depends on where you are and what you're doing, but there is guidance out there. Also, in every geography, we have lots of people at Microsoft that are devoted to helping customers who are getting going on Azure. So if you have a sort of specific scenario that you want me to connect you to the local Microsoft Australia people about so that they can give you a baseline, I'm hesitant because, of course, it's very different in the U.S. than it is in Australia. Do you know what I mean? So I want to get you connected with Australian Microsoft people so you can get an appropriate baseline. We have baselines, but there's no, like, number I can give you. Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? Nope. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you. I hope it was worthwhile.